Yeah. All right. You know, I was just thinking about myself today.
Yes.
And I was thinking about how great this record is.
It is great, Elvis.
It is great. You know, I like this. I think of all my favorite records of mine, this is my favorite.
This is your favorite one?
Yeah, until I, you know, I'll just do another one and it'll be my favorite too.
Of course, Elvis Costello, right,
you like
Elvis?
You like this one?
What album is this?
Oh, this is, I believe it's My Aim Is True.
It is. That's correct, Elvis. Yeah. You remember.
Well, it's amazing. You know, as many hits as I've had, and as great as all my songs are. You like this one, right?
I do. I noticed you lost your English accent when you come to Shabby Road.
Well, you know, it's a slope, man. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you'd go, yeah. Right. When in Rome, right?
Right, right.
So 1977, is that correct?
I don't know.
You don't
remember? Probably.
Yeah. And the Angels want to wear my red shoes.
Not your red shoes. My red shoes.
Your,
you know,
Elvis's red shoes.
Because they're my red shoes.
Yeah, is this produced
by... A little better than your red shoes.
Is this produced by Nick Lowe?
No, I probably did, but I might have put Nick's
Actually,
name
I
on
did,
it.
I did produce that song. Oh. Yeah, I did do that record.
Thank you, Nick. That's what... All right. It's a great...
Could go on forever.
As much as we like making fun of that, I love Elvis Costello.
I do, too.
I love the first three records, anyway. I don't know. I don't go much further than that.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't go too much further than
that. Oh, it's 78. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, 78.
Wow.
Okay, yeah. We should work together again.
I must have been doing something even greater in 77. I don't know.
All right, let's get going.
Release the Kraken!
Hey, what's up? This is Pete Lorne from Trickster. Hanging out with AD and Ryan here at the Shabby Road Record Show, the hipster-free classic vinyl podcast. I am blindfolded and taking off duct tape down at Shabby Road Record Show in front of your naked steaming ears.
Well, hey, Lava!
Hey, Lava!
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and now, he's that old bitchin' Camaro that we got covered up in the garage. Let's fill up his tank and take him out for a joyride. It's AD Adams!
Vroom, vroom, vroom! Well, it's good to be back in town, isn't it, Ryan?
Indeed it is.
From the sunny beaches on the Florida shore to the slimy belches in our Sunny Slope parking lot, we have returned, unwashed and somewhat slightly dazed, but we are ready once again to titillate your lug holes with joyous sounds, sordid tales, merriment, and mirth. I have no idea what mirth is, but it's probably weed. Who knows? Who cares? Not me, because we got records!
Oh, we do have records. Tons of records to share with you guys tonight. Love holes? Did you say love holes?
Lug holes.
Oh, okay.
Lug holes.
Thank God.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank God. Well, thanks for joining us here. This is episode 208. We're setting sail right now. And let's say hi to our producer extraordinaire over in the Shabby Command Center. That, of course, is the dulcet tones of Liz Damian Brooks, the notorious LDB. How are you?
I'm doing good.
We were just talking about the Michael Jackson documentary on HBO.
Yeah.
She is wildly offended.
I was.
Yeah. Mm. Difficult to watch.
It was. Yeah. It was.
I haven't seen it yet. I don't have HBO, so maybe I just won't watch it.
I won't.
Again, don't let your kids in the room.
Don't let my kids watch the show?
Don't, no.
Okay, yeah.
Well, at least not nude. Don't let your kids watch this one naked, people.
It gets a little graphic.
Really?
Oh no.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of graphic, she's brought with her that bag of bolts known as Sal 5000, her sidekick. What's up, Sally?
Kiss my ass, sugar.
Come on. What did I do to deserve that? We waited for her to boot up. We're starting late because of her.
Right?
I don't believe it. And she comes
out.
Oh,
you won't regret a single second.
I bet not.
Trust me.
All right.
She wants to make up with you.
She does, yeah. Can't wait to get these records going. But before we start taking them out one by one and dishing about them, let's say hi to our friends over at nameonanything.com, AD.
Nameonanything.com! Hit it, boys!
Oh, God.
Ooh, what you want? Baby, Name on Anything's got it! Ooh, do some oohs. What you need?
Ooh.
You know, Name on Anything's got it!
Ooh.
All they're asking for is a little click on their website!
Ooh.
Name on Anything!
More ooze. You don't have to give them very much money, and they'll put your name or logo on anything, honey. Backpacks, hats, and some sexy ass underwear, whatever you want. Name on anything. Oh, etched into glassware, stitched into hoodies. NameOnAnything.com. That's NameOnAnything.com.
Wow, that was quite something. Urethra Franklin, ladies.
Urethra.
Urethra Franklin.
Thank you. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Whew.
All right, let's start talking about records.
Let's do that.
What's going on? What's going on with your box? You told me you have a theme.
I have a three-parter, and it's really awesome. It's
a trilogy.
It is, and it's they're so tied in together that it's just absolutely unmistakable. And the weird thing, all three, one's from 2009, the other was from 2010, and the other one's from 2011.
Wow.
All three selections are from New York City.
Okay.
And all three selections are from bands that had split up, reformed, and pretty much sucked, never really quite igniting or living up to their former glory. So I'm calling this one Second Time's Not a Charm.
I know what one of them is.
Fun little box.
I know what at least one of them is. I bet. I can make a guess. I got a very strange record that may alienate some people. So I figured, man, I better put something in that box that everyone's going to love. So I've got my artsy record, and I got a band that I think everyone loves. Everyone loves, and we haven't played them since episode 106. They're a shabby favorite. It's got a lot of great stories,
okay. And
I can't wait to get that going. So I guess nothing left to do now except figure out who's going to go. Well, you're going first, AD, in a ceremony held earlier.
Oh, that's right.
It's three versus two tonight. So,
right?
Yes. So skip the card playing trick and let's just get cracking.
Yeah.
While he's pulling his first record out, I want to thank someone who bought beer for us tonight.
Yay.
There is officially beer here at Shabby
Road. There is.
Tulsa, Texas, X's is their username.
What is it?
Tulsa, Texas, X's.
I like that.
All my X's live in Tulsa, Texas, X's.
Yeah, baby.
I have a sneaking suspicion that that may be one Mike Mullen, because the email address had Mullen in it. So if it's you, Mike, thank you for buying the beer.
He
went to the website shabbyroadrecordshow.com, where you can fill the fridge there by the big frosty mug of beer. It's a PayPal link, and it's greatly appreciated as we wet our whistles.
Enjoying a Guinness right now.
Ooh, do we have any more that I
we
may have?
Do.
Why don't you drink them
actually,
all, you lush?
No, they're in the fridge tonight.
Oh, okay.
Cooler, yes.
Wow, we're stepping up in the world. Okay, you go ahead. I'll get my own.
Yeah, okay. Listen, my mystery box, as I said before, is ensconced squarely in New York City tonight. And seeing as how that the theme of my box is, of course, Second Time is Not a Charm, I'll go straight ahead and start with this band's second album. Now, when I use the term second album, it may be a little confusing. See, what happened was this band was formed in 2004. They released their debut album 2 years later in 2006. So their first album's in 2006. They were met with positive critical reception. As a matter of fact, they're out of 25 reviews from like major sources, the average was 7.5 out of 10. So the critics really liked this.
Okay.
The fans...
Respectable.
It's weird. The fans, though, they were just like, you know, they kind of built this following, and the fans just went, what kind of record is that? You know? But we've had other bands notoriously do that. Like, one band was Face Dancer. You know, I thought that their live show that they'd built for years, and they put that first record out, and the production wasn't as big as their live show. So a lot of fans kind of went, oh, wow, man.
A lot of bands fell susceptible to that. You know, obviously Kiss.
Production and maybe mastering. Yeah, Kiss, you know, the same thing.
Early Kiss albums and stuff like that. But Face Dancer was in the 80s, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, 1979, I think, or 80.
Yeah, they should have had it down by then.
So,
engineer-wise.
Again, some... Like the fans weren't as thrilled. One critic described it as an above average pub band. And they had made some personnel changes prior to the recording as well from their live thing. There was a quote, the newer members lack personality, flat out. Just like, Fuck the new guys.
Zing.
Boom, right? So what is in my mystery box, Ryan? Who are these mystery girls? Well, they're the New York Dolls, Ryan.
Wow.
I have their second...
That was my guess, by the way. I know that they're in the box somewhere.
Well, what happened was... Now, it is indeed their second album. It came out... It's called 'Cause I Said So. 'Cause I Says So. Came out in May of 2009 on Atco Records. Produced by Todd Rundgren, Ryan.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Here, take a look at it.
Well, he did the first Dolls album.
Yes, he did.
Now, so you are considering this to be a new band. You're not acknowledging...
That's their second album.
Yeah, okay.
They formed in 2004.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Just happened to have two former members of the New York Dolls.
Right, yes. Exactly. So now... Okay, here's the deal. Second time is definitely not a charm. Actually, this is their second attempt at a career. Their first time through, you know, most of the people, I think even recently, as an episode or two ago, we were talking about it. My Dolls issue is this. This is their second album of their return.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a terrible album. It's just not a Dolls album. It's not a New York Dolls album. So I would like to have heard this one called, you know, Johansson Sylvain or anything, or the Dolls.
Something different than
the
calling
New
it
New York Dolls.
Because, I get it. I understand. You know, I'm kind of with you on that.
Aerosmith kept going, even though they made changes. You know, they never broke up. You know, you could say, well, there's only Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey and who? Yes, but they never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Dolls broke up, they stopped, and then they put it back together and all that. So I found it for $12.99 up at Zia's, up in Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm.
It was brand new, sealed, and, you know, completely sealed in cellophane, but sold as pre-owned for some reason. And there's really only one reason I bought that particular record, and I'll explain that later. That's okay. So we'll just move on. So what brought the New York Dolls back from the dead? It was goddamn Morrissey, right?
It was Morrissey.
Goddamn,
that's right.
Morrissey. British pop star or something, or whatever he was. So he had been a longtime fan of the Dolls, founding member of a chapter, a British chapter of the New York Dolls fan club when he was like 13 years old. Morrissey had arranged for a reunion of the three remaining band members, singer David Johansson, rhythm guitarist Sylvain Sylvain, and bass player Arthur Killer Kane, okay? Now, there are equally as many dead Dolls as there were living Dolls.
That's true.
Drummer Billy Mercia died in 1972, who overdosed at a party in England.
Demanding Billy Dolls.
Right, yeah. And he drowned when people tried to revive him by force-feeding him coffee. Of course, legendary lead guitar player Johnny Thunders died in a hotel room in New Orleans. Some say drug-related, others claim foul play. People who should know are claiming foul play. Hmm. And of course, drummer Jerry Nolan died in 1992, suffered a stroke while being treated for bacterial meningitis and pneumonia in a New York hospital. And his illnesses, of course, were drug related as well, just from his use. So anyway, Morrissey puts on this big concert in London called the Meltdown Festival. That was 2004. He was given a blank slate. Every year, the Meltdown Festival picks what they call a curator. It might
That's
be Morrissey.
Cool idea.
It might be Santana 1 year. It could
Santana
be,
likes you. He wants you to play.
It could be Jeff. You will play Meltdown, or you'll suffer Santana's wrath. But it, you know, it, like they might have Jeff Lynne or whoever, right? So
I'd go see
it
Jeff Lynne.
It was Morrissey's year, and basically they give him a blank canvas and a pretty good budget. And say make this festival. Pick your if you have a dream festival, Ryan. If you are the curator, that's what the leverage you're allowed.
Nice.
So he's like, fuck, I'm going to get the Dolls. Even if
Neil
I just,
Merriweather.
Right? Fuck yeah, dude, right? Oh my God, that'd be killer. But so he's like, I'm going to get the Dolls. If I have to spend my whole budget on the Dolls, I'm going to do that. So it was held at London's Royal Festival Hall that year. The first ones began in 93, and they were actually started as classical and modern pops. Kind of, you know, like the Pops Fest, you know,
yeah,
the modern,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
With the orchestras and stuff. But within a few years, it became more of a popular music festival, and that's, they had the curator thing from the beginning, right? It's a really cool concept, I think, really.
Yeah.
So June 11th, 2004 was Morrissey's version of it. His main goal, like I said, was to get the Dolls, and he did. And it was awesome. I've got a DVD of the show, and it was fucking incredible. It was David Johansen, Killer Kane, and Sylvain, and a couple other dudes. You know, not even, I don't even mention. But, dude, I mean, it was so great. I wept. Rivers of tears, snot bubbles, the whole mess, you know. And like you said, if you haven't seen it, you've seen it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
They're on fire. They're doing the old doll stuff. I mean, it's great. You got to check it out. So, you know, so even for all the pain you've caused me with your dreadful music, Mr. Morrissey, I got to at least thank you for that. So it was pretty cool. So now there's three living dolls. They're going, maybe there's some money in there somewhere, right? Let's say we get this fucking shit back up on the road there, dolls, guys. So Sylvain and Kane and Johansen are in. The wheels were immediately set in motion for a new record, but not even 22 days later, on July 13th, 2004, New York Dolls bass player Killer Kane checked himself into the hospital in L.A., complaining of fatigue, and of course he was quickly diagnosed with leukemia and died within 2 hours.
Jesus.
So it was fucking brutal, right?
Wow.
So they're going, well, you know, and Johansen and Sylvain are going, well, let's just keep going anyway. So what about this record? Like I said, this is the second one after regrouping, you know, their big return. The name's the same, the logos are the same, and even the familiar voice out front is the same, but this is not our New York Dolls. It's just not. Pretty good record, though. It would have been a great album, like I said.
30 years later. More than 30 years later.
But it's just, you know, there's something about the Dolls and the Edge and all of that. It's too clean. The guitars are too, they're tuned up and it's bullshit.
they're in tune,
right?
Playing together.
They're all playing the same song. I think what it is about the whole new return is I think that they fancied themselves sort of sophisticated suddenly. And they're not. They're the New York fucking Dolls, you know?
They kind of always had a New York chic thing.
Exactly. Chic is one thing. Cool is another. Glamorous is another. But sophistication, you could be glamorous and not sophisticated. Look at Mark Bolan.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, that's the thing. And when they came back with this sort of air of sophistication, they're drinking their Pabst Blue Ribbons now with their pinkies out. You know, and it's just like, come on, you guys.
Huh.
You know, so that to me, just the whole edge got lost. So listen, I love my New York Dolls. And here's the deal. This is a good record.
No, it's not.
This, honestly, you know what, Ryan?
You hate this record. I thought you hated it.
I hate it as a Dolls record, but I listened to it about 6 times in the last 2 days. And
it's growing on you.
If it weren't a Dolls, it's still not a New York Dolls album. It's a Dolls album. It's a whatever they are, the faux Dolls album.
The Johansen Sylvain conglomerate.
Yeah, that's what that is.
Quick story about this album. My memory of this album, the last time I heard it, to be honest, we were at my studio when I had Shabby Even Wester.
Shabby West, yeah.
and you had just got it, I think. Did you buy it or did I have it? I don't know.
I had the first one and the second one on CD.
You had the second one on CD. We listened to it and we said that it's the worst album we've ever heard. And we compared it to Peter Criss's solo album, not from 78.
Which we listened to endlessly.
The one from like 2000, One for All, I think is the name of it or something.
Yes.
We listened to that and we said, this is the worst album I've ever heard. And then you put on the Dolls album and we went, no, this is the worst album. At least Peter Criss album is funny.
Right.
Like it's ironically
bad.
It's
so bad. But now this, again.
This is just like nothing.
There's that false air of sophistication on here. That sort of faux sophistication on here.
Yeah.
And I'm just not buying into it because I know who they are. I know who they are, right? But it grew on me in sort of like a Buster Poindexter kind of, you know. But Buster's records
are fun
because it's a character and that's forgivable.
Yeah,
right. So if I lump it in with the New York Dolls, I hate this record. But if I clear my head and go, it's just a record.
Uh huh.
It's not unlistenable, you know what I mean? So what I did was I listened from front to back and front to back and front to back. The album, like I said, is called Cause I Says So, S-E-Z. And I found the only song on here that is even slightly reminiscent of the old New York Dolls. And it's going to be the title track, because I says so.
Okay.
Side one, track one. It's David Johansen's observation and basically his lament over the modern day society, the invasion of privacy due to cameras being everywhere, bathrooms, streets, shops, airports. And there's even a vague reference on this song to someone getting arrested by the cops at JFK Airport for getting caught on camera smoking a doob. So listen, I really do love my Dolls, and I actually have kind of, I've really kind of gotten to like this.
You got to look at it like it's record. Like it's a David Johansen solo album to me. That's what I did for the first.
Yeah, and I did.
Yeah, and Sills there too. Yeah.
And I did. And so I kind of got over that stigma. So as it sits, I'm like, I guess I'm glad I bought this record. But the problem is now with my OCD and my, okay, now I got to get the other one, right? Because they did another one. They did one before this.
Mm-hmm.
Fuckers.
I think half of that is good, actually.
Okay, well, I guess. Yeah, so now I got to accidentally run into that one. God damn it. Right? So anyway, let's just put on some New York Dolls from their Cause I Says So album. Came out in 2009 on Atco Records, produced by Todd Rundgren. Let's do the title track, Ryan. Side one, track one, written by David Johansen and Sylvain Mizrahi.
The problem I have, you know, it really hurts it because it's labeled as a New York Dolls record, and it adds this air of just being contrived.
Sure.
Over the entire proceedings.
Absolutely.
You know, if you call it David and Syl,
you got a decent record, everyone's
excited. And you got the guitarist from Hanoi Rocks.
You got the bass player, Sammy F.
The bass player from Hanoi Rocks in there, so it's like, it's got some legitimate cool stuff happening, but It really is about the name to me. It hurts that project.
It does. So we're just going to say this. That was some band out of New York City from 2006 calling themselves the New York Dolls, not to be confused with the New York Dolls from the 70s.
A different band.
Yes.
Yes, kind of like there's two altogether. Ravens. There's a Raven from the 80s and
right,
a Raven from the
exactly.
70s.
That was the title track from the New York Dolls, the right. new New York Dolls second album, Cause I Says So.
You know, the song's good. Liz has got it in her head, she's saying.
Yeah, it's a good, listen, it's a good record, but it's just not a New York Dolls record. That's it.
Yeah, if you can just let that go. But boy, it's hard to, because it seems
it
so
is.
Contrived.
And the thing is, they put a real indelible stamp on their brand, on their first only and only two studio albums, mm-hmm. 73 and 74.
Yeah.
You know, boom. So, what you got, Ray?
Okay, well, this is going to be my record that everyone, a band that everyone loves. I've never met a person that didn't like this band.
Journey.
I don't think 80
You just
likes.
Met one.
Yeah. haven't played
That's
them.
Right.
They've.
Journey.
I believe it's four.
You don't hate them.
Four times on the show, they've made an appearance. And episode 106, so it's been over 100 episodes since... We've been to Ireland and heard from Tin Lizzy.
Oh!
Yeah, I got
Laddie.
Laddie. And this is a record we've never brought. And this is one of their most famous records from 1979. I have Thin Lizzy's Black Rose, a rock legend.
You do?
Great record.
I don't have that.
Oh, this is an essential Thin Lizzy record.
You don't see this one around that often.
No, you don't.
Is it black vinyl?
It is black vinyl. Yes. Wow. It should be blue based on the cover.
I just got that. I was about to check.
Hades looks at it.
You know when Bugs Bunny turns into a lollipop? Sucker, sucker, sucker.
Yeah, this is highly regarded in the Thin Lizzy catalog. You know,
yeah.
Maybe considered one of the last great Thin Lizzy record.
Alex Harvey's in the band.
He pointed to, who did you point to?
Gary Moore.
Gary Moore is on this record. He finally stuck around long enough with his buddy Phil Lynott to make a record with Thin Lizzy. This is his one and only record that he actually played on all the way through.
He looks drunk as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, drugs are... They're ensconced in drugs and alcohol by this point. Let's backtrack a little bit in the career of Thin Lizzy there. Brian Robertson is the guitar player that is replaced by Gary Moore on this record. Of course, Brian, part of the great the duo there, Scott Gorham and Brian Robertson are the signature two guitarists of Thin Lizzy. And he is out of the band at this point. Going back a few years prior to this record, he suffered an injury to his hand, so he had to leave a tour, and that obviously pissed off Phil Lynott, the singer, bass player, and basically band leader. What happened, he had a hand injury. What happened was we went to go see his buddy, a band in London with his buddy Frankie Miller.
And wow!
Frankie Miller's been on the show. They're both from Scotland. So
and they're pals.
They're hanging out. So they're hanging out.
How cool is that?
Frankie gets hammered.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes. He wants to get up there on stage and do a number. He's Frankie fucking Miller. So he's a great singer. He had hits and whatever. And it's a reggae band called Gonzalez, and so he gets up there and just belligerent as all hell, somehow manages to piss off the guitar player, and something happened backstage, and the guitar player starts attacking Frankie Miller with a bottle, and Brian reaches out and gets his hand cut by the bottle trying to protect his friend.
Jesus.
And there was like artery and nerve damage, so it really sidelined Brian Robertson for quite a while.
Jeez.
Now, this story may be apocryphal from here on out.
Wait, what's that mean?
Fake.
Oh.
Fake news. But subsequently, supposedly, Brian broke the guy.
The Space Force. Separate but equal.
I don't know why I like that drop so much. It's so out of context. Like everything. Like everything he says. So he apparently broke that guitar player guy's leg. The dude that was attacking Frankie Miller with the bottle, he broke his leg somehow. Broke the collarbone of another man and headbutted another guy before himself being hit on the head with a bottle, rendering him unconscious.
That's a good fight.
That's a Donnybrook.
That's Monarch backstage. 5 minutes. You guys got 5 minutes till you're on.
Hell
get
yeah.
your fighting done.
That's
get your boxing.
Get
in. Your
get it out of the way. So they're not going to cancel the tour. They're going to the States from January through March, and Brian Robertson's on the sidelines, so they got Gary Moore. And this is 1977. They're opening up for Queen. Did you see him open for Queen?
No. What they did was when Queen played, they did a different arena, and there was a different band opening up.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was a lot of times when you're on tour with a major and maybe a local – maybe there's a regional band that's hot.
Yeah.
They'll put that regional band on the larger show, and then the band that's touring with the headline, they'll book you in a smaller venue in the same area.
Oh, cool.
So I saw Thin Lizzy and Golden Earring
nice.
At Painter's Mill, which is basically the Celebrity Theater.
Oh, wow. So
on this tour.
A 2,000-seat venue.
In the round.
In the round, too? Oh, cool.
And it was half.
And that was Gary Moore.
It was half theater,
though. Probably the 77
yes,
tour?
Yes, yeah, and it was...
Excellent. So that tour is over, and you know Gary Moore is already in a band. He's in his band called what are they called? It's the jazz fusiony band.
Oh,
what are they called? Yeah. It's that one guy is in it. That bass. I don't know why I went
that
down this
road.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not into that stuff, but I like his later solo stuff. But it's going to drive me crazy. Somebody type it in the show notes for us there, someone on Facebook
somebody
or Twitter or Instagram. So Brian comes back, you know, they go in and record their 1977 album Bad Reputation as a three-piece, but even Scott Gorham recognizing that, you know, there's something magical about the two of us to play together, we get on good and all that, so let's keep some solos back for Brian. And Phil was like done with him, because they never got it along that well, the two of them. And add to that, Brian is a big drinker. You know, and he's constantly boozed up, and
my kind of guy.
And yeah, it just wasn't a good mix. But he, you know, to their credit, Brian comes back and he plays a few solos and stuff on the Bad Reputation album. He's not pictured on the cover; it's a three piece on the cover.
Oh,
but then
I didn't realize.
Yeah, but then you take the inner sleeve out, and Brian Robertson's in there. So he's got a whole.
Oh,
it's
no
very
shit.
Strange. Great record though, and so then he quits for good. They do the tour, a short tour in 78, and that's actually where they got the material for the Live and Dangerous double live album from that 78 thing, and because he's on all of that, Brian, and he quits. You know, Phil and him finally are just like, we can't go on. I hate you, and I hate you too, and fuck you, and who's next?
Fuck you. Bye.
And he forms a band called Wild Horses with Jimmy Bain.
Oh, that's a party waiting to happen.
The two of them together.
Holy shit.
A fellow Scotsman.
and Jimmy Bain.
Jimmy
Bain and anybody.
You can go on Spotify and probably YouTube and listen to Wild Horses from 1979 and 80, I think is the era. They did two records, and they're pretty good. They sound like UFO. Jimmy Bain's the singer.
He's a good singer.
He's a good singer.
He sang a lot of the back vocals when he was with Ronnie.
Yeah, Ronnie Dio. Yeah, so good stuff there. Now, so Brian and Phil are on the outs. It's over. So Phil asks Gary, come on back to the band, laddie.
The boys are back in town.
That's right, for the next album, and that's what we have here. And so, and this is, again, a widely acclaimed Thin Lizzy album. I don't think it's as consistent as even Bad Reputation, the album that preceded it. I don't think it's as good as that in consistency, but its highlights are freaking high highlights. namely, the title track, which is, they really show their Irish roots on that title track. There's a song called Waiting for an Alibi, which is fantastic. I'm going to play a song called Got to Give It Up, which is... in my opinion, one of Phil Lynott's best vocals ever. And the deal is with this song, it's all about addiction. And these guys know all about it. So you got... now heroin is now involved. Like, now they're doing heroin. I know it's Phil.
That became chic in the late 70s. That's kind of kind of snuck in. Then.
And, of course, they dealt with everything with Brian. And it just seems always... kind of around. And this song, like lyrically, if you listen to the words of this song, it is so heartfelt, and Phil is singing his heart out. he talks about he wants to go home to his mom. Like, he's so beat up on the road.
Pussy.
And he's,
Sorry.
And he's, you know, I didn't make it. I tried to make it, but I didn't. You know, I've been drinking way too much. In the second verse, he writes to his brother and says, we never could really communicate. I don't know what to say in my letter. He writes a letter to his sister. You know, he talks about doing cocaine. Like, every once in a while, I powder my nose. And he really writes this. It's like in the form of a heartfelt letter.
A letter home.
Yeah. And he talks in the last verse, he's talking about doing smack. If you listen to his voice, and I love Phil's voice, man. It is like just his cadence. It's so Irish.
You know, he kind of sounds like this a little.
It's very Van Morrison. Van Morrison was so impactful in Ireland. You know, he was huge, and everyone kind of took that thing. Even Springsteen stole everything from Van Morrison. But
you know, I'm rather ambivalent when it comes to Thin Lizzy as a whole, as a group. Yeah, there are some of their stuff I like, and I like it so fucking much. But then there's other stuff I just go, I don't get, like the Cowboy song. I go, everybody just goes, that's the greatest song ever. And I'm like, that's okay.
It's all
okay,
right.
You know?
It's not the best song on that record.
And, I mean, they were Emerald great live. Is. Seeing them live was amazing. But yeah, they're more hit or miss with me, and I don't
the
know
start
why.
Here is Live and Dangerous.
Absolutely it is.
That's, I mean,
absolutely.
It's got all the big ones, and the ones that you don't know by name, you'll love more than the ones that you know by name.
I
so like you skip over Boys Are Back in Town to get to Emerald.
Right.
And Massacre and all that.
I think they're one of those bands that is better live than in the studio. We were almost just talking about that as far as, you know.
Yeah, I think this album rectifies that to a degree. I think the production on this is really good.
Yeah.
And you can't hear this song anywhere else. I believe it's a fairly deep album cut, although it was released as a single somewhere. Not in the States, of course. But it's all about the vocal and the lyric. And,
cool.
You know, it's so heartfelt. And then you think about how everyone in the band is dealing with an addiction at this point. You know, it's like, and they are really singing from the heart. You know, so track one on side two, Got to Give It Up from Black Rose, a rock legend, 1979, from the mighty Thin Lizzy in their prime.
I've got to give it up. I've got to give it up. That's true. I've got to give it up. I've got to give it up. That's true.
Yeah. won't get too far. Tell my mama I'm coming home. In my youth I'm getting old, and I think it's lost control. Mama, I'm coming home.
Guitar players are shredding.
Right.
I think that was both of them. That sounded like Scott and Gary.
Two Les Pauls, obviously.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right. Got to give it up, man. That's a good vocal. I like that. He gets a little like throaty, but it's very impassioned.
Very angsty.
You feel like you have the DTs or something while you're, you know, listening to it or something. You know?
Not only spilling your guts, you're spilling your guts to your family. That's when the real shit really becomes
emotional.
That's
good Irish storytelling, eh?
Right?
You know, he wants his mom and his sister and his brother. And when he does the verse about his sister, he goes a little higher. He's more passionate about that. You know, his brother is like, they probably fought a lot.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
He talks about his sister and he loves her. He wants to protect her, but he's failed.
Sister,
you know?
Right? Yeah, of course.
Yeah. What's the good-looking guy's name?
Scott
Gorham, right? Oh,
okay. Yeah, we asked Liz if Scott was better-looking than Punky.
No.
But that's a good-looking man.
He's a good-looking man.
Go, right?
As I said, if I was a groupie, I'd do him.
That was indeed your response. Yeah, if I was... Yeah.
Well, he's the best-looking guy in Thin Lizzy.
He is the only good-looking guy in Thin
Lizzy.
Oh,
how dare you.
Right?
Oh, and Liz, what was the name of that Gary Moore's band you found?
Coliseum.
Coliseum. Sorry, right. Everybody, I forgot. But yeah,
he's dead too. So.
Yeah, also alcohol.
You know,
everyone.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah. All right, AD. Well, give me beer and let's do another record.
You want a beer? Here, I'll get you one.
Yeah, actually, I'll take you one. I'll take one.
All right, we're out of. Oh wait, I might have a Miller's. I got Kilt Lifter or Miller's.
Miller's.
Oh
no! If there's just one, then
no. I got three Miller's.
I'll take a Miller.
I'll take a Miller. It's the champagne of beers, Liz.
It's the champagne of beers, Ryan. Yeah,
I think they're cold, right?
Yeah, cold enough. Okay, thank you.
All right. Get my cherries.
Thank you,
chair scooters.
Texas X's.
Right.
Texas X's.
Tulsa, Texas X's.
For my champagne of beer.
You're right. Yeah. Champagne. All right, listen.
So bubbly, it's what champagne drinks on New Year's Eve.
This album, like my first Mystery Box selection.
Oh, that was Liz. What's the matter with you?
Yay.
We are trying to broadcast a serious show.
It's
yes,
the bubbles.
It is. It's Bublé. Michael Bublé. This, like my first Mystery Box selection, is by another New York City band that had long since split up and then made the questionable decision to reform using a sparse representation of their classic lineup.
Oh, no.
Using the same name, the same logo, and began recording their new music decades later. And just like the New York Dolls, that's exactly what they did. So this, of course, qualifies this band, and especially this album, as the abject disappointment it is for my Mystery Box inclusion this evening under this title, Second Time is Not a Charm. So what makes you think then the third time would be any better? Let me explain that here. This reprehensible collection of whatever it is should hang right next to Mott's Drive On and Shouting and Pointing in the How Dare You Hall of Shame.
Those are two dreadful albums.
The band in question and the insulting sonic stain they call an album? That's right. The New York Dolls.
Oh, what's this now?
Now, this is a third album that I forgot. Remember they came back and made two? This was the third and
they made a
final.
Third?
Well,
I didn't even know they made a third.
Listen, okay, here's the deal.
Oh, for...
Why, remember earlier I said I'm going to explain why I even have 'Cause I Says So?
Uh-huh.
This fucker is why.
Where'd you get that?
At Zia's. Cocksucker.
Why do you keep buying them?
Listen, what happened
what
was this, Ryan. This was also sealed and new and sold for $12.99
as new.
That
should be your first.
When I went to Zia that day.
Red flag.
When I went to Zia that day, I didn't, you know, what am I looking for? I didn't even know they made these fucking records.
Have
on.
Have you even opened it yet?
Yes.
Okay. just curious.
So I didn't even know they made a third record because I was so just pissed on the first two, right? So I see this and I went, a third one? And I didn't know they put them out on vinyl, period. So like I said, I had the first two on CD, right?
Oh.
So I look at this and I go, oh, you know, what do I do? What do I? And I go, I haven't heard it. Probably shitty. You know? And then, and I remember, and that Steve Conte guy isn't on it. Frankie,
no.
Frank Infante's on this, though. From Blondie, remember?
Oh,
and Joan Jett
is
band.
Is that who that guy
yeah,
is?
Yeah, Frank Infante is in this one. So I'm going, all right, he's got one of his old New York boys back.
Gary right? Moore's on it.
Right?
Just kidding.
Yeah, he's dead. So yeah, he's another dead New York doll. So
you.
I'm going, all right, fuck, right? And I went, I'll buy it.
So what, did they get a three-album deal with Atco?
No. Oh, no. Atco said no more. This is on 429 Records.
Oh, no.
429
Why?
Records. Not produced by Todd Rundgren. It's produced by a Jason Hill, right? This album is called Dancing Backward in High Heels. Mm. All right.
I don't like so many things about what I'm seeing.
This is their third and most senseless album upon returning to releasing their new recordings. The only thing in my book that actually qualifies this as being an album is that it is indeed a round 12-inch slab of vinyl with grooves in it and a hole in the middle. It says New York Dolls all over it, but I will be goddamned if I can find a one. No one, nothing, not only is this their third album since reforming, thankfully, it is their last so far. So
they cover Funky But Chic. That's a David Johansen song.
Well, on 'Cause I Says So, they actually do an acoustic version of Trash.
Oh, God, no.
It's horrible. So the reason I bought this, like I said, is I didn't know it existed. There it is in front of my face on vinyl. And I'm like, I'll, it's the Dolls. I know it's going to suck, but maybe there's a God. Maybe.
Now you
right.
So now
you're questioning my entire religion. Yeah. So, and I bring it home, and I put it on. It is so awful. It is so fucking awful. It was so fucking upsetting. So the thing is, this was the first one I bought. So then immediately I went, oh, fuck.
Oh,
they're
no.
all out on vinyl. I guess I'm going to have to buy the other ones. So not looking for them, I bought 'Cause I Says So a week and a half later because I'm like, my mind is set. I got to buy the goddamn things now because I bought this one, right? And so I found 'Cause I Says So literally a week and a half later. So I still need to buy their goddamn first one, which is, what's the name of it? One day
we'll
it will
remember,
please. One day it will please us to remember even this. And
terrible,
that, come on, like, what are you
title.
Doing?
Terrible title.
Jesus. Fucking New York Dolls. God
damn. How about
it.
The New York Dolls are back?
So, bullshit.
It's something.
So here's what we're going to do. This is
guys,
so,
I finally made it to New York City.
All right, so
shut the fuck up.
It was
that's what Atco said to
this. May be,
hey, lady.
This, Ryan, is without a doubt the worst album. It's worse than the Peter Criss album and the other one combined. It may be the worst album in my record collection. I couldn't find five good seconds on it. So here's what we're going to do.
Oh, no.
Oh.
Here's what we're going to fucking do.
I'm just going to...
Instead of me talking about this record, I'm gonna walk over here. I've set up Mikey Bones' mic over by the turntable. I've got some notes here. And I'm just going to track by track drop the needle on a couple of seconds of each track. Just so you know, I'm not bullshitting. All right? And we'll share in this fucking horrific train wreck together.
How many of these you want to hear here? Four or five?
Oh, let's just rip through them. Let's see what we got. Just give me the record. I'll start it at one and...
go as far as we can.
We're going to need a safe word. Strawberries.
Stop.
Strawberries.
Strawberries.
All right, okay.
All right, here goes AD's going over.
So can you fire up Mikey Bones' mic over there?
It should be on, right?
Okay, hold on.
You got this on? Okay, it's on, right?
Yeah. Right. Liz is on it over there in the Shabby Command Center, right?
Christmas song.
I know, it sounds like a Christmas song.
I'm a fool for you, baby. That's what it takes to get in your mind.
What?
I'm a fool for you, baby. It takes a fool to spell by.
Right? There you go. Okay, look, that's your first track on side one. Who the fuck are you? And then there's a steel drum solo on the outro? No. No. No.
So... track two is Street.
Track two is called Street Cake.
I like the title.
He don't took off without the dough. I'll be your daddy, rocking strong, like a swinging old Diablo song. Let me be your street cake till your bread man comes.
Let me be your street cake till your bread man comes. What the ever-loving fuck? Okay, so, track three. There's a rant. Now, David, this is, again, the pretentiousness of the Dolls
yeah,
at this
he's,
point. Right,
David.
Here you go. Listen.
Oh, wait.
Here you go.
David's been getting pretty pretentious of late.
They had it so nice where they were. The streets were clean. Everybody was like, how'd you do? How'd you do? Then they come to New York where we're like, who gives a fuck? And they want to change it. It pisses me off still. That's what this song is about. And the clothes they wear, you gotta look at them while they're making the rules. I'm so fabulous, you're Las
right?
Vegas. You New Yorkers who look nebulous. I'm more fab than all the hipsters on Broadway.
Okay, strawberries.
I'm so fabulous. That's track four. You were a long time ago, very fabulous, David J. That's just bad rock. And then somewhere in the middle, a drunken choir of geese. posing his horn section coming
that
in the middle.
Sounds
let's see
expensive.
If I can find that. Hang on. Hang on. All right. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so
that
now.
That was saxophone.
Track five is the worst Tommy James and the Shondells song that was never made, thank God. It's called Talk to Me, Baby.
Wow, you really hate this record.
This world will take everything from us.
Four Tops imitation.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna give you every living thing that you want.
All right, now strap in for this one. This one's called Kids Like You. Basically, it's organ grinder music with five monkeys. It's not cute. It's not adorable. It's abuse. And your whistling solo is even more fucking retarded than your steel drums on the first track. Stop it, you goddamn Dolls. Okay, here.
Here you go.
That's so bad. How do you feel about the drum sound on this album?
Love for your salvation.
Sorry.
He's acting on you like a poison dew. No one tells you what to do. Kids like you.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
Boy, that's going to be hard to listen to. What's that, 6 minutes long?
Yeah,
that?
Track seven, last track on side one. It's called Round and Round She Goes. Basically, it's Motown meets Bo Diddley meets Stray Cats. And who the fuck needs that? I wrote a similar song in the fourth grade. It wasn't good then either. All right, here we go.
Who's playing the saxophone?
Some idiot.
Round and round like a Ferris wheel, rocking over Junior Reel. You should feel the way she feels, dancing backward in high heels. There she go, round and round.
My ears hurt.
Strawberry.
Strawberries.
Oh, side two is quick. We'll just want to rip through side two.
Yeah, okay.
I sold my heart to the junk man.
Now, is this a Neville Brothers cover? Because they got a song.
This is please, Mr. Postman's retarded step niece. Whatever the junk man paid,
you
David
can't
J.
say that anymore.
Okay, okay. Sorry. Well, it is though. Listen, you'll agree. Side two, track one.
He's from a different era, everybody. Strawberry.
It's Monster Mash.
It's Monster Mash.
It is. It's a monster.
I hear what they're trying to do. I feel like they're not really pulling it off very well.
They're missing it badly. Yeah. Track two on side two. You don't have to cry. You know what?
I'm crying.
You definitely. This is definitely worth crying over. Yeah. And you can cringe while you're at it.
You're doing a good job with these drops. The drums are too washy.
Sounds like they slowed the tracks down.
Wild Horses. Doesn't it?
Sounds what?
Like Wild Horses.
It sounds like dead horses to mere dying horses. There you go. Okay. Track three, Baby, Tell Me What I'm On is the name of that.
Okay, that's a good title.
Right, yeah, well, it's quite possibly the worst of the bunch. I'm definitely now. I'm even offended by this one.
You've been offended for the first all of them. 14 of them.
Curtain of the universe is torn at me to nurse.
What was that? Okay.
This one you're going to recognize. It's funky but chic. But
off David Johansen's awesome 1977 solo album.
His first album, right?
Or 78.
78, right? But, you know, they did it exactly the same. It's just...
Oh, no. I don't want to hear... Strawberry.
Right? Here you go. So why drag this good song into this fucking mess, right? And lazy, and I'm sick. Not the way, nothing, not too fussy on me. Right? Okay, there you go. And the final track.
The problem with that is, like, it's good in 1978 because disco was in New York all over the place, and it's a commentary on it. Disco hasn't been relevant for fucking 35 years.
Hey, we're out of songs. Maybe we should drag back Funky But Chic. And since it was on my solo album, you guys are fucked as far as royalties go. So we got one more. It's called The End of Summer. It's the end of the fucking record, too. Thank God. So here we go. The New York Dolls, I think, is what they called. So here we go. Check it out.
That is not the New York Dolls.
You know what?
Oh,
let's
man.
Just, you know what? Let's just don't even play any of them.
Can I borrow this record? I liked it.
I think.
I'm serious. I'd like to hear that production stuff and see where it really went wrong.
I think you've got a good sampling of it. Listen, this album is just like a misthought David Joe solo project with Silt. Just tagging along, just trying to figure out which heels looks best with his new cowboy outfit. The Faux Dolls, they managed to drag Frank Ian Fontaine in here for some how they
the Blondie guy.
Yeah, he allowed himself to be dragged into this clown house of an album. I just it's amazing.
Get a lot of rage on this one.
It's like, you know what the thing is, you know. I don't know.
They just went for a 60s pop album.
But they missed by a long shot.
Well, yeah, I mean, got such a quick little sampling. I that's why I'm curious to hear it. I wouldn't mind borrowing it to kind of really kind of listen and understand. Because in my headphones on that, it sounds terrible. Like it's
horrible.
It's mixed poorly. Like it was trying to sound like a 60s era record, and it's like, ooh. And it's not good.
It's just missing it. It's not melodic.
But we're
nothing.
Listening in mono. I'm listening in mono, so maybe in stereo it sounds better.
Oh, that means both ears have to suffer. You know, but so, I mean, we could pick a song, but that's
I think we did good.
That's like asking which method of crushing your testicles would be your favorite. You know, of course, if I had to pick one, it would be Inga Rumpf's chin while I was... Oh, never mind.
Easy.
So, right, should we just like,
let's move on.
Skip it.
Yeah, let's move on.
All right,
on.
That
yeah.
was Dancing Backwards in Heels by the New York Dolls.
We got the whole record.
Yeah, that, we got the whole thing, man. That came out in, when the fuck was that? 2011.
11.
Yeah, 2011, March 15th. Beware the Ides of the Dolls. And yeah, Dancing Backward in Heels. Avoid that one. If you see Because I Says So, go ahead and pick that one up because it's okay. But this is what started it. And at that point in time, I was when I saw the second one, I'm like compelled to buy it.
Oh,
I got to buy the first fucking thing.
Oh, wow. AD, that was a fun segment. I enjoyed that. Boy, calm down, have a beer, relax. I'm going to play some really interesting music at this point.
Well, what we had was pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting. Moving on. This one has a post-it note attached to it.
Uh-oh.
And the post-it note reads, "You want Strange from Canada? You got it."
All right.
Signed, our good pal, Simon Fatou.
Oh, Simon, hey.
So Simon, about a year and a half ago, sent us, was it that long ago? Maybe just a year.
It was a while ago.
Yeah, it feels like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Sent us a box O' Canada of...
just tremendous.
A bunch of Canadian bands that are very interesting.
Yeah.
And little by little, we've been doling them out. It's been a long time, and I thought, man, we got to start bringing those records out here.
I still have a couple chambered.
Yeah, I still have some, too. And I can't remember if you have a copy of this record or not. I brought a very avant-garde artsy band called Thus.
No.
Owls.
Thus Owls?
Thus Owls.
No, I don't.
Still got the post-it note there from Simon on it.
Oh, wow.
There cool. It shall remain. Now, it's an EP called Black Matter, 2015. So we are spending a lot of time in the 2000s here.
Look how modern Stone Age family we are.
Now, as for the quirky band name, Thus Owls, basically it's... the Owls, but they figure there's too many bands with the blank, the this.
Like that.
So we'll go Thus Owls.
Like the band The Image, which is T-H-E-E.
Right. So who are Thus Owls? It's actually a Swedish-Canadian conglomerate, and they're made up of just a husband and wife duo, which was actually another band that was in that box.
Timbuk 3.
Well, yeah, there's that. Yeah, but White Horse was one from in that Canadian box from Simon as well. So thank you, Simon. These records are fantastic.
They really are, man.
When
some
you kind of
really interesting stuff.
Absorb
man.
Them, it's pretty cool. So yeah, for you, Liz, it's like it's girl power because Erica Angel, I guess is how it's pronounced. She's the lead singer, and cool. Both her and her husband Simon. They write all the music. Simon's a guitar player, so husband and wife.
All right.
Cool. And so before...
they'll break up.
I don't know. They're on like album number 6 now or something.
Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah, if the past is any indication,
yeah,
husband and wife duos do not last in the rock and roll business.
No.
But they're in the art rock business, so maybe they do last forever.
Yeah.
A la Ike and Tina.
Oh, Jesus. Ike and Tina. No.
Tina ain't going nowhere. You ain't leaving a band. You ain't leaving a band.
Oh, my God.
No, you ain't going nowhere.
So before they met, Simon Angel was a guitarist in Patrick Watson's band. Now, I played Patrick Watson. He was also in that giant Box O' Canada from Simon. Very avant-garde musician. And so Simon played guitar for him. And now Erica was over in Sweden. And she had her own band. I love this band name. Joseph and Erica and the Moth. Now, I don't know if where I read that. I was reading that, and I go, is that two separate bands? Because there's two ands in that band name. Joseph and Erica and the Moth. Is it Joseph and... I was in two bands. Joseph and Erica.
Hamilton, and Joe,
was
Frank, and Rose.
Also in the Moth.
Yeah.
But whatever. Did some background vocals and stuff, and... She finds like some other like-minded musicians, and it's really kind of like a jam band around 2007 in Stockholm, Sweden. And they start gigging around, and that's how they met, because Simon was over in Amsterdam, and this new found Thus Owls little jam band led by Erica were playing. And so they kind of crossed paths, hung out. and then they shared iPods with each other.
No.
And kind of like, you know, going around and looking and seeing what's in the iPod, and they found like, wow, you like this band? Like, it's a fairly obscure band.
Like,
it's
like trading like tapes. Mixtapes.
Yeah.
What's on your mixtape? Oh, I adore that.
Yeah, they found that their music collections were very similar in taste and stuff. And of course, obviously, there was a musical connection in terms of like what she was doing and what he was doing with Patrick Watson and all that stuff. So I imagine that, you know, sparks flew and they hooked up, and he was now a member of Thus Owls, which really just the two of them, you know, became that, because the jam band was just sort of in and out, people that were probably in and out, I would assume. And it just became those two. They go to Canada. So she follows him back to Canada, Montreal, and they begin recording and doing their own thing. And they put out like three records prior to this EP. And then now they've just released a new album in 2018. So this album, I think, is very out there. It's very interesting. Now, Erica sounds a lot like Kate Bush or Tori Amos.
Yeah.
That's kind of her. If I'm going to compare her to anything, that's totally what she sounds like. The instrumentation is very, very interesting. You get, you know, just, you never know what you're going to get.
Like there's a didgeridoo, didgeridoo and a jew harp.
Might as well.
Yeah.
Because you've got acoustic instruments against electronic instruments, all very sparse, as our friend Steven Seaborg once said, sink into your couch music, great for headphones, and you listen to all the little parts that are going. It's art rock, you know, it's Velvet Underground, you know, it's not obnoxious. It's actually, there's some pretty good hooks on this record for being an art rock album. You know, it's got it kind of all over the place.
Now, did they self-produce this, or?
Yes, they do self-produce. What they, one of the things I read today was that they are very, they look for a good engineer. So an engineer that they believe in. That's obviously very important to get the tones right. You know, and then in terms of where everything is put spatially, you know, in the mix, that's up to them. But it's important to get, you know, the tones right. So speaking of Simon, they asked him what his first gig was like. And this is kind of a cool story. He said it was my first band. I was in high school. We were all like 13 or 14 years old. And we played at a community center for about 25 other kids. We had learned a bunch of covers like Creep by Radiohead, some Pearl Jam and Nirvana, music of the time. And at the last minute, we decided to throw all of that out and just improvise, and ended up doing some weird hardcore free punk type stuff that I'm sure sounded terrible, but I remember it being very extremely amusing to us. So I like that. It's like, well, you know what? Let's not do that. Let's just jam.
Sometimes stripping naked at a cocktail party where people are in tuxedos can be amusing to oneself as well. Just probably not a good idea.
Right.
What do I know about that?
When he was asked, okay, Desert Island, you can bring 5 records to the Desert Island.
Okay.
He goes, Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd. 5 copies in case 4 of them get lost. He's a big fan of that record, apparently.
Oh, that's interesting.
But obviously, you don't even really hear a lot of, I mean, I suppose the atmospheric bent to the entire record may indicate a Pink Floyd influence. But really, to me, it's because of Erica. It's like, it sounds like Kate Bush or,
sure,
you know, even like Bowie, Black Star, like a lot of that really out there. Okay. Kinda, you know. And Simon's first album. What was your first album you ever got? Slippery When Wet by Bon Jovi.
What?
I know.
Ooh, yeah.
That is
7th birthday.
It makes no sense. Seventh, oh, well, I'll get that done.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so, again, the band's name is Thus Owls. The album is Black Matter, and I'm going to play the end of side one, AD, a song called Shields. This one, I had a hard time. Yeah, you could pick anything on this record, and you're going to get the same result. To me, this one struck me in terms of the production, and also Erica really shines on it. She adds all of her own harmonies and stuff like that. There's really great vocal harmony going on. There's times when it's very wet in the mix with a lot of reverb, very ambient. And then at one point in the middle, it breaks down to real dry, which I'm a fan of.
Tove does that a lot.
Yeah, it's very wet, and then it just comes down in there right in your ear like this right now.
Yeah, very
intimate.
With
nothing. And I love there's two main sections of this song, and I really love the second section. So you got to wait a couple minutes till we get there, but the whole song is only like 4 minutes, four and change. But that middle section is fantastic, like that melody, and then at the end they reprise that melody again. So let's check it out, man. Let's drop the needle on this.
You know, considering my last segment,
it's a
no matter how bad the first part of the song you're about to play
I like the there's a really cool kind of harmonic tone that's going on in that first. I'm not sure what scale they're using, but it's interesting enough for me. It's all keyboardy, you know. It's kind of, you can hear all the different things that's going on in here. The drum machine almost sounds like 79 80. But there's real drums. It's just everything you can imagine. It's like, how do you guys even create that? How big is that palette? You know, where you go, I want this texture and I want that texture. That's what makes this record interesting to me.
I think it's obviously an indie production. And, and that's, if one thing about the breakup of the whole music system, I mean, nobody's getting paid anymore and everybody's got a recording studio. So it at least enables people with good ideas like this. I haven't heard it yet, but, you know, with good ideas to make their own music their own way without some guy going, you know, you're going to need to get a bigger hook in the chorus. Or, we, you know, that's a highly unusual arrangement. We need to go intro, A-A-B, A-B, bridge, chorus,
right.
And out.
Exactly.
You know, so at least, if nothing else, from the sort of the whole heyday of the digital age of free music and the downfall of the big label dollar.
And they go into a nice small studio, and then they also do mixing and stuff and record stuff at home.
Do what they want to do.
And it sounds tremendous.
Served Emmett Rhodes pretty well.
Absolutely. Hey, Emmett Rhodes. Yeah, cool.
Thank you.
That is...
What'd you think?
I didn't take my headphones off.
No.
I listened to that one right inside my cans.
Right Inside My Cans is one of your films.
Yes.
Eva was in that one. Eva Derche.
Oh, yes, that's right. Irma LaDouche was also in that one, as I recall.
Anyway.
It was definitely Tori Amos on the vocals. I would put it there.
Hard not to compare.
Maybe second record. Initially, I was feeling sort of a Dr. John vibe, you know, very kind of chicka-ma-chicka-ma-crane-crow kind of vibe with the drums and sparse percussion. Yeah, but more space age because the instrumentation was a little different. Right, space age Dr. John.
As futuristic.
Right?
New age.
And, but we get about, you know, a couple minutes into the song and I'm hearing these Japanese chords, these, you know, the sort
that's
of
why I was interested in the
geisha tones kind of
didn't really
thing
sit
going.
And figure it out, but that's a very interesting texture.
That sounds like something I would put on my playlist to sleep at night.
Yeah, very mellow,
it's
very
good,
ethereal kind of
yeah.
spatial. And
there's that calming
mm-hmm.
effect.
Oh, I want to fight a motherfucker.
I took my knife
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I threatened Ryan. Didn't you hear that? You were in the bathroom.
Thus Owls. I will say this. The first few albums that they did were it's all kind of very similar. They're good. What I liked, because I listened to their first album, I listened to the most recent. They just put out a record in 2018. And I'm really digging the newest record. So I think you can kind of see them growing and really just...
Another one of my films, see them growing.
You see this this development, you know, and I mentioned the word palette, like the palette that they're pulling from. I mean, there's just every sort of texture and sound.
Yeah.
It's like they're way into that, you know, and I find it fascinating.
It's really sparse, though. I mean, you can hear kind of, you know, the whole Pink Floyd reference that he made, you know, his favorite record and all that. It is definitely very sparse. They're not, you know, they're creating a place by leaving a lot of space, it seems like to me, you know.
Absolutely. And the combination of sounds range from that weird drum machine that sounds like very primitive drum machine,
right?
Which is great, you know, as a texture. And then some synth. There was a very tiny, and I mean T-I-N-E, wide, like a tine from a Rhodes piano, very bright, brittle, tiny piano, and then real strings. Like there is a real string quartet on this album.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like everywhere, you know, it's like, this is you never know what you're going to get with this band. So thanks, Simon Fateau.
Yeah.
Very interesting
really
album.
Interesting. I think
I really enjoy it.
Look at that.
You're,
right?
You're going to borrow it, and I'm borrowing your New York Dolls album.
you're borrowing the worst, the bad one.
I can't wait to...
That was the one I was hoping would come through for me, though, fuck's sake, and it didn't.
What do you got next? Don't tell me you have the first one out of this bunch.
No, I swear to God.
Do you have
a real New York Dolls album?
All
right, this is definitely the last but best selection in my mystery box, I promise you. This thing is just chomping at the bit to get out. It's banging so hard to get out of the box. It seems like it's broken a nail, Ryan.
Mm.
It's proof positive that second comings can be disastrous. And to demonstrate that, this second time's not a charm. This band is glamorous. This record came out in 2010.
2010 now.
Okay.
2010. Now, it can't be their first record. Right? This band was disturbing.
Reformed.
They were delightful. They were dangerous. They were fun. And I'll just go ahead and let the real New York Dolls out of their mystery box. This is the real doll. I had to come through with something that is so real Dolls.
Sorbet. This is the sorbet, the palate cleanser.
It is. This is the real New York Dolls live at Radio Luxembourg, Paris.
You brought this once before, did you not?
1973, I played something off of this.
This is what we've been missing all show,
AD. This is the real Dolls. In the early 70s, all right, there was this band called the New York Dolls. This is actually them.
Not to be confused with the 2006 band of the same name.
A fake thing. This band was formed in 71 and released their first record in July of 73, right? They were already making headlines in the rock magazines before the record came out. You know, just their fashion, you know, the whole thing from New York to LA to London, Paris and all that. But they were really, people in Paris and London especially were going, what's this? You know, like, three bones.
Bones. Suckery bones.
Terrible.
Yeah, right. A lot of people claim to be the inventors of punk rock, and I suppose that's debatable. But what isn't debatable, and I will fight you. Not you. I'll fight you, too. I'll fight Liz. Uh-oh. I'll fight anybody listening.
Okay, take your tops off, you two.
Yeah. Get your shirt off. Or that's coat. No, I said shirt. No, the New York Dolls certainly at the time were the embodiment. They might not have invented it. You know, the attitude is really punk, so you can't really say that. But they were the embodiment of it. They were over the top. They were flipping the finger. They were wearing, you know, cowboy boots and shorts through airports and just pissing people off, which is what punk was. They were wearing shiny things and makeup, and it was outrageous, and it was fantastic, right? But at the time, they were a band that understood their limitations. You know, they never tried to color too far out the lines because they knew what they were capable of, and especially what they weren't capable of. They had a great drummer in Jerry Nolan, who really kept it together. Mm-hmm. Arthur Killer Kane was very meat and potatoes bass, so he and Nolan couldn't help but lock in, which gave Nolan a pretty wide playing field to do his thing, and right. He was a goddamn good drummer, really. If you listen to what Jerry Nolan did, don't write him off as just a punk drummer. He was a really, really good player. And then, of course, you got Thunders and Sylvain. Sylvain just chunking the chords, and Johnny Thunders is Johnny goddamn Thunders. I mean, like, what do you want, right? So they remained true to their rock and roll roots. They remained true to their love of the doo-wop groups, and they put it together with electric guitars and heels and on heroin. And it was just fantastic, right?
Heels on heroin.
Heels on heroin.
And they
got a title. We got a title.
But they pulled it off with a big, big smile, you know, a whole lot of swagger. But the thing is, with the Dolls, their tongues were placed firmly in their cheeks. And that's the thing about the new stuff. They came back after the 2004 Morrissey concert thing in London and thought, well, wow, we're the shit. Well, they were always the shit. But you were the shit because you didn't think you were the shit. You were the shit because you just did your sloppy stuff and were just what you were. Mm-hmm. You came back thinking you were something. And I think that really fucked it up, right? So it got too good. It got too slick, you know? And you know what I mean? There was a pretentiousness. My issue, again, with the new stuff, and I've said it before, and this will be the last of it, but they lost their edge when they lost their junkies. You know what I mean? When all the good guys died, when all the fucking junkies in the band died,
well,
they failed to be, because that's what made them, that's what made their sound.
Reckless and sloppy and dangerous and all that.
But something,
you know,
really, really good and palatable about it, you know? And
It's a moment in time. You can never recreate it.
You know, it's like a comedian that can tell bad jokes and get away with it. You know?
Like us.
We're not really getting away with it. Yeah, yeah.
And they're not. Yeah.
Au contraire, mon frère. Back to the French. But you know what I'm saying? So that's all I really want to say about it. So it seems like the self-assumption of their uptown sophistication is fake and contrived with the new Dolls. This is the absolute antithesis of this. I'm going to keep this short. Because I've said enough about this. All I'm going to say is this record was recorded over in Paris, France. It was for a Radio Luxembourg. So it was recorded, mm-hmm, and then edited down and all that stuff. But this was them raw. Their first album had just come out in May of '73. Their next album would have been out in July, '73. It was their first record. Their second record came out the next year in May, so 10 months away, right in between their first record, The New York Dolls, and Too Much Too Soon. And this was in December of '73, smack dab in between them,
mm-hmm,
right? So they were over there for Christmas. They were huge over there. And just going over there, they were young, they were raw, they were hungry, they were a fucking beautiful mess. This is what the New York Dolls really were, the New York, unabashed New York Kings of Punk. Before they traded in their relevance for another 15 minutes of fame and a quick, easy paycheck, I'm gonna play.
Wow, those are strong
I'm
words.
Gonna play a song that I loved on their second record. Now, the second record
I
hadn't
love the
come
second
out
record.
Yet.
I like the second record better than the first
one. Well, you're gonna love this, Ryan. I'm gonna play from Too Much Too Soon, a song that was originally released and recorded in 1956 by two different groups within a week of each other, the Jayhawks and the Cadets. I used to have a single of this, the B-side of the Fearsome Foursomes' Fly in the Buttermilk from 1965. And the Fearsome Foursome was the L.A. Rams' starting offensive line. They had a vocal group, and it was Lamar Lundy, Deacon Jones, Merlin Olsen, and Rosie Greer,
yep.
Who Mike Ditka called the most dominant line in football history, he said.
Mm.
So I'm going to play a song that the Dolls are in. Paris, France.
Dolls are not the most fearsome linemen in the NFL.
Not when you hear this song. They are a mess. They're trashed. They're a wreck, and they're having a fucking blast because they're in Paris, baby.
Didn't the first thing they do after they get off the plane, like Sylvain just threw up all over the
place?
Yeah,
and then they had a big press conference, remember? And they invited the press, and then they made everybody, like, you know, it's like ran a tab, and then they split on the tab. Remember that?
Yeah.
So I'm going to play Stranded in the Jungle, Ryan. And this is, now what I played before of the Dolls tonight, this was, I wanted to do this in one night to make it relevant.
Now, I have a very important question to ask you.
Ew.
And this goes to our friend Steven Seaborg, who was our archivist. Mm-hmm. Archivist? How do you say that?
Archivist.
When he logs this episode, 208, mm-hmm. Does he put an asterisk by
asterisk
by the first two Dolls records you played as a separate band? Because there is a tally of who is the most played band. And if you log three New York Dolls songs, aren't they going to take the crown?
Nah, just one. I only played one Doll. I didn't even play the
so
Dolls
he,
song.
So he, like a New York Dolls with an asterisk.
Well,
Let's do this. Let's go to
label it as the Dolls.
Let's go to the Academy for this one. Now, technically, they are New York Dolls. Let's go to the chime in on this, peeps.
Oh yeah, I know.
You guys,
I want to know.
Come on,
I
want
to
hear.
I think there needs to be an asterisk.
It's like with an ST at the end.
Yes.
Asterisk.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's just play Stranded in the Jungle.
It's unfair for them to kind of be number one most played artist when you've just played three in a row in one show.
And describe why they're not.
Because Kiss needs to be the number one played band, and I will bring three Kiss records.
No.
To surpass it. Then there's a war.
No, seriously. My motivation, I think you understand my motivation by doing this.
Of course. No, I'm totally down.
It was so thematic. And to do it over a series of shows wouldn't have been, I don't think, as impactful.
Right.
And I think so. It kind of needed to be done. And I didn't plan on finding these two fucking records. Right? Oh, I mean, come on. So, Stranded in Jungle, this song is a mess. And I would rather have this sloppy fucking mess, New York Dolls, than that contrived, pretentious, uptown sophisticated whatever Dolls that we just played. So, the New York Dolls from 1973 in Paris, France, on Lilith Records. The album's called Live at Radio Luxembourg, Paris, 1973. Stranded in the Jungle.
Oh, jungle, it's like a...
Encourage him. That's great.
All right, so
bad it's great.
That's why these three records. Listen, I didn't plan on finding those fucking two other records.
They
didn't
really know
that.
The words of that song, did they? I feel like some people
knew
didn't.
Some of them.
That needs a serious like compressor or limiter on the background vocals.
Listen, my thought was this, Ryan. You know,
guitars
like,
sound good though. I mean, if they tuned them, it would be great. But if
it wouldn't be the doll. See that I wanted to find after playing those first two tracks, something that is so Dolls, and like I would rather listen to this all night with out of tune guitars, forgetting the words. But when they were in their heyday, they were hungry. They weren't. They were just that.
It's
you
just
heard it.
Charming.
I
There's
would
something
take
charming
that
about it
all day long over the polished, faux sophistication of the of what we just went through. You know, and dude, we scoured that second pick of mine track by track. And I did that. I wanted to do that for a reason. It's like, is it me? And I just need everybody listening to go, no, it's not you, dude. That record is that bad. So that was the real New York Dolls, the only New York Dolls that ever existed. Live at Radio Luxembourg, Paris, 1973 is the name of that album. Stranded in the Jungle, of course, a classic song written by James Johnson and Ernestine Smith long, long time ago. No producer credited on this album for... Well, pretty obvious reasons. Don't put my name on that, you son of a whore.
Yeah. Right? I didn't record that.
Right, Stranded in a Jungle. That was released in July 23rd of 2010.
Well, you noticed that how we were smiling all the way through that. It made us so happy.
Point. That's my point,
you know,
right?
Yes. Just laugh at it like, oh, Johnny.
That's
what are you doing? Johnny right? Thunders, come on. You know, and Syl and the words, and it's like, that's why you love the Dolls. It's like, it's
exactly,
that.
Exactly, and they removed that from the new improved, whatever call band that is. Steve Seabird.
Asterix.
Okay, yeah, the Asterix Dolls.
Please put it, everyone vote on the social media thing. You'll see it on Facebook, Twitter,
or give suggestions
Instagram.
As to what we should call them.
Yeah.
You know?
Don't call it nothing. It never happened. Let's thank Liz Damian Brooks for running the controls over there.
Damian Brooks.
Hey.
She's got to go pick up her man.
I do.
He's
I do.
Done working at BLK
yes.
live in Scottsdale, the club.
Yep.
And we got to get Mark back on the show one of these days, right?
One of these days.
She's also brought with her that cantankerous old bag of bolts, Sal 5000.
Hold on a sec. I'm going to get me a beer.
I will do the same. All right. Well, thank you, guys. It's episode 208, and we are wrapping it up here. We appreciate you checking it out and leaving us an iTunes review. That helps promote the show a little bit and gets it in front of the eyeballs of unsuspecting victims. And
Unsuspecting.
Oh, I missed that. We're going to do a happy hour again,
yes.
don't we?
Yes.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Finding us on all those social media things that we've mentioned. We're on there at Shabby Podcast. All that stuff, and I guess that's going to do it here, right, AD?
Yeah.
Anything else you need to mention?
I got no more New York Dolls that I wouldn't.
I got another New York Dolls album.
Oh, jeez.
The mystery boxes are empty, so it's time for me to take you both out for ice cream.
Yay!
Now, you've all been good boys and girls, right?
No. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, never mind then. So that'll just be one peanut butter parfait for me, one fudge sundae for Liz, and, well, you could just sit there and think about what you've done, Mr. AD Adams.
Woo, you know it. I don't think. I just do. And we do thank all of you for dropping by the old Shab tonight. Now we know what a real plane crash sounds like. But before you go reaching beneath your seat for your flotation device, please help me secure the oxygen mast of my pal, my co-host, and my pin-the-tail-on-the-hooker coach, Ryan McKay. Good night, everybody.
Lower, AD, lower.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code Shabby at checkout and save 10% on your order. nameonanything.com.